like to call this meeting to order. Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'll take roll call. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
14 members present. Mr. Shinagawa is here. 15 members present. The first order of business this evening is the election of a temporary chair. I will open the floor for nominations. Is there a motion?
Nobody.
Ms. McAsey?
I move that we nominate Frank Proto as our temporary chair.
Is there a second, Ms. Robertson? Are there any other nominations? May I have a motion to close nominations? Moved by Mr. Dennis.
So moved.
Seconded by Ms. McAsey. All those in favor of closing nominations, please signify with aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. We will now vote on the nomination for Mr. Proto as temporary chair. All those in favor, signify with aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Mr. Proto.
Well, we've done this before, haven't we? We haven't acted chair over before. That's okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I've been told already that I cannot try to adjourn the meeting on a day-to-day basis as we've tried in the past, but I have to keep it short. Kathy Herrera has a bet going that we'll be out of here by 7, so we'll see what we can do. First, I'd like to wish you all a happy new year, and thank you again for the honor of standing here as the temporary chair for a short while. Usually I have a list of things that are going on so I can tease people. I have a short list. I unfortunately wasn't able to pull everything together as quickly as I normally do, but since we're in a literary community, I just wanted to give you some highlights of this last year. Hi, Greg. And if it's appropriate, we'll probably go through this again after the official vote on chairman takes place, but I'd like to recognize Ken Lansing as our new sheriff. Ken? Since we're in a literary community, with the holidays having just taken place, whether you celebrate Christmas or Kwanzaa, whatever, Hanukkah, I went down the list of book titles that I was reading in the New York Times and trying to award some of you things that match up. And I came up with some interesting book titles, if you will. Kathy Covert has done an outstanding job of keeping us all in line. And one of the titles that appeared on the bestseller list, I think it's been on there for 3 years, is How to Deal with 15 Prima Donnas. And I thought that she'd appreciate that. Her staff always does such a good job for all of us. For Jim Dennis and for Dave Squires, I know that we came through a difficult budget year, but I picked up a brochure put out by the state of New York on how to balance a budget. It's a four-pager, one fold, and I'll see that you guys both get them because I know it's going to be another interesting budget year. Peter, you're going to love this one. For Peter Stein, did you see Alexander Haig's new book, How to Avoid Confusion? But I thought, Peter, you're a good foil. Thank you. Nathan,
I do appreciate that, but that'll just keep me quiet, so I'm not sure how willing to go.
I don't think so. Nathan gets the award for the book on speech writing made easy after that last one that you gave us at the last meeting. Dooley gets a copy of Greg's shorthand because of the copious notes that she takes. And Brian, I know in your other life you're doing a lot of work over in City Hall, and there was one put out, and probably Ken can help you out with this, on scanning made easy, on how to pass through. Kathy Herrera, I beg your pardon, Kathy. Kathy, this is a real jab. How to review minutes.
Sorry.
And you know, Pat Pryor has a hidden life. We talk about this on the Ag and Farmland Board periodically, but I always tease Dooley about, because we both enjoy watching the horses run, but Pat Pryor also enjoys watching the horses run. And Pat, I blew your cover, didn't I? On great jockeys in this century. It is a brand new book, by the way.
Thank you.
Martha, I can't miss you, Martha. How to be an activist. I know that's going to be a new one. And Martha sent me a book on public speaking and how to keep my remarks. She was concerned that I'm not speaking enough. And thought that I ought to go into this a little bit more. On a serious note, I just want to make sure, and I know all of you, yes? Carol, do you feel left out?
Yeah, this is what happens when you let a Republican read the New York Times, I think.
You mean we come out with information? And we read the book review, too. Carol gets the one on tourism, but I didn't get down that far yet. The serious note that I want to... And I'm sure this will be said again before the evening is over. We really came through a really tough budget year. And all of us, we didn't kill each other. And it was very testy. And I think Kathy and her staff really deserve a vote of thanks. Dave Squires, Jonathan, for their guidance. Joe, for your ultimate patience. I've never seen anything like it. The department heads all deserve a big thank you. And my colleague, Jim Dennis, who I tease unmercifully sometimes, but seriously, I think we ought to give Jim a real round of applause for leading us through a budget season where he made us all ask questions. And I think that was laudable, but we survived. And I'd like to ask all of you to give Jim a little bit of an applause tonight.
I'm not dying.
No, I suspect.
We're relieved.
But, okay, serious business. The order of business right now is to select and vote on a chair for this illustrious body, for the legislature. So I'd like to, Kathy, are you ready? First of all, let me ask you, would you like to do this by a show of hands, or would you like to do it by secret ballot? Any suggestions? Let's see how many nominations we get, and then you can make that determination. Okay. The floor is open for nominations for chairman or chairperson of the board. Peter.
Yes, thanks for recognizing me, Frank. I would like to nominate somebody. What? There's 15 people here, right? And I have to choose one. I'm confused. oh, no, now I remember. Okay. I'd like to place in nomination the name of our current chair, Martha Robertson. And I would like to, if there's a second, I would like to speak to that nomination.
Is there a second? Second by Dooley. Go ahead, Peter.
I'm new here. It was just a year ago that I sat down in this room and voted for Martha, knowing nothing very much about the chair, about the legislature, or anything else. And this year, and at that meeting, Martha was selected for the first time. So, in a sense, I think we are both a work in progress. Over that time, I've come to understand more, but not all, about this organization. And I'm sure for Martha, even though she had been on the legislature for a long time, any time you take new responsibility, there is a learning period. When you decide who to nominate for a job, you really have to think about two things. You have to think first about the requirement of the job, and then the second about the person. Not necessarily a good person or a person that you like. It has to be a person who brings to that job the abilities that that job requires. So first off, I'd like to talk a little bit about the job, and then after that, rather briefly about the person. I was trying to think of an analogy. It's a funny job. I was really not quite, didn't really understand the role of the chair of a legislature when I first came in, because it's unlike, I think, most other jobs. First one thinks, well, it's something like a mayor, something like a governor, but it really isn't. And I was looking for an analogy, and I find what you might think of as a strange analogy, but the analogy is the Pope. Now, the Pope has a three-word job description. The three-word job description of the Pope is primus inter pares, loosely first of many. Now, if you think about that for a while, that doesn't make any sense. It's an oxymoron. How can you be the first of many? If there's many, either everyone is first, that doesn't make any sense, or if there's a first and the many aren't first, then they're not equal. So, but on the other hand, that notion, which obviously can't be true because it's not logical, is an unreachable ideal that the Pope is supposed to strive for. And in a certain sense, I think that describes the job of the chair. It's first of equals. It's not a person who is set aside with special powers. And that's a very difficult job to try to fill. Let me tell you what I think it takes to be a successful primus inter pares, whether you're the Pope or the chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. One, first and foremost, is the respect of your colleagues. When you don't have a legislative power, you deal by having the respect of your colleagues. And that's critical to being successful. And what gives one the respect of their colleagues? Well, there too, there are conflicts. It's very important to know everything, and at the same time, to avoid being a know-it-all. And again, that sort of sounds like it's impossible, but it's an ideal that one must strive for. I think that the chair of the legislature should be seeking consensus. And by the way, consensus means more than just being able to count to eight. There has to be a respect for disagreement. There has to be a commitment to sharing information. There has to be a striving to include everyone in the decision-making process. A successful chair must keep our mission front and center, namely serving the needs of the people that we represent. And last but not least is a person who listens and learns from criticism. Now, as I go through this list, in my opinion, I believe that Martha has demonstrated in various ways, which I will not enumerate, how she has able to move towards accomplishing all of these difficult goals. Before ending, there are a couple of other things that don't quite fit into that litany, which I think are very important. One, Martha works like a horse. You know, I wake up in the morning, and after I stumble out of bed and throw some water on my face, I usually go over and sit down at the computer, and I open it up. And what do I see? First thing I see, by the way, is three messages in Chinese. And then the next, I don't know if you all got, every morning I have three messages in Chinese. I have no idea what they are. Then there's Shubai, there's PayPal, there's Amazon. And then there's Martha Robertson, sent at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then some message which I can't bring myself to open. And then there's three more ads, and then there's Martha Robertson at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm telling you, does she never sleep? I have really not run across many people who work harder than Martha does. Number two, she never says die. And I think that notion of pursuing the goals with determination is important in the leader of the legislature. It's a little bit complicated because there is a time to say die, but I've never seen that time arrive at here. And third, she makes things happen. And the primary thing that I know that must go through everyone's mind when I say that is the fracking effort, which I think that she was extremely that she contributed leadership throughout the whole state. So with that, I will conclude my nomination. Martha, it's an honor and a pleasure, and I think you've done a good job, and I'm sure you'll do a better one. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Are there any duly?
I was foreclosed from making any remarks because Peter followed parliamentary procedure so correctly and asked for a second before he spoke. So I would just like to say a little something about seconding Martha's nomination, if the chair will permit.
Sure.
Thank you.
Let's put parliamentary procedure aside. Sorry, Peter.
This has been a really exciting year to be part of Martha's team. She and I have different working styles, but we figured out how to work together. And I think it's been a useful exercise for the county as a whole. Peter said everything there is to say really about Martha, but her boundless energy is, I think it's helped keep me young, and I appreciate that. And I think she's been an absolutely excellent face for the county. Locally, lots of meetings and organizations, but also outside our county. And that's a very valuable bonus, which you don't always get with every chair. So I'm happy to second your nomination.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. The name of Martha Robertson has been put in nomination. Are there any other nominations? Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does seem like a long time, actually like more than a year, since we were here last. And I think part of it is the tough economic times that we've had. I think part of it has to do with the events on the national and the local scene. I think that as representatives, we would be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity, while respecting the leadership that we've had, to also recognize the opportunities that we have to move someone forward into leadership who has actually been leading all along, and in fact, who has had a long career in leadership as an activist, as a community member, and as a leader in her own right, someone who gets phone calls in the middle of the night, whether or not, and before she was ever in elected office, Leslyn Mabeen Claiborne has been leading in this community and on so many levels, as a parent, as a member of parent with children in the school system, as an activist in the community, and on the legislative body. Many of us who are not new here remember that Leslyn served ably and commendably as vice chair, and as a matter of fact whose name was put forth in nomination as vice chair on a number of occasions, notably also last year. The events of last year that some may not have been aware of or that may have been forgotten by some have not been forgotten by me, and I believe that the grace and the leadership that Leslin has shown at that time, as well as before and since, illustrate the characters and the qualities that she brings and would bring as chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. For example, anyone can forge consensus, particularly if they have a legislative majority and access to private meetings and can enforce a private vote, a private deal, or tell people that they must vote the way that they promised. It takes someone with respect for their peers to lead through the breach, and that's what first among equal means. It means the person that puts themselves in jeopardy by going first and to say, what's going on here needs to be corrected. I found a quote that I like. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. I believe that Leslin shines a light on what matters in this community. Diversity, honesty, integrity, ways that we make our actions match what we say. And one of the things that Leslin has done very quietly behind the scenes, without leaking private emails, without holding press conferences to denounce other leaders in the Democratic Party and in other places, she has very quietly, through phone calls and through personal conversations and through group and community meetings that were open to the public, engendered discussions about the things that matter, the things that we must not be silent about, the things that we need to have reconciliation about, because these things are ways that we have made our actions not match our stated values. We say we care about transparency. We say we care about having our leadership not take actions without the will of the body, not publish letters without the will of the body, not appoint committees or have private meetings. As a matter of fact, we even castigated a past leader in the not at all distant past for doing some of the very things that every one of my colleagues sitting around this table knows happened at the end of this last year's session. Why? Because it is a big job. Being chair of the legislature takes a lot of attention. It's even harder when you're under attack by a political peer who is intent and who never says die and who is intent on gaining leadership. Leslin has demonstrated the kind of leadership that I admire and that I believe every employee and every citizen and every resident of this county could admire, and that is by example. She has brought people to the table that may not necessarily agree, that have differing styles, that need to reconcile together, and she has found ways to get them to be able to hear each other and listen to each other, something that's been, in my opinion, sorely lacking. And despite my calling for it and Leslin calling for it, no attempts have been made to reconcile in the legislature some of the disparaging things to leadership that were initiated and done. These things are damaging and corrosive to community. I've spoken about this in the past, but it's Leslin who has demonstrated the healing. It's Leslin who has gone on through the Sean Greenwood situation and through the house fire at the Bangs to be able to stand up, show leadership, take some risks, and say, this is what we have to do to bring ourselves together, not focus on how we're different, not attack other leaders, but pull people together. She has a history of taking those chances, but doing it in not a self-aggrandizing way, doing it in a way that builds community. I believe of everyone sitting at the table tonight, she is actually already the first among equals. It's just a matter of offering her the opportunity to show us the way to lead this community better than we are now. In a way that's unified, in a way that's respectful of all groups, in a way that will teach us, and not by instruction, by standing at the podium, but by example, first into the breach. So it is with great honor, and it is a great honor and a privilege, that I would like to nominate Leslin Bean Claiborne for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, and I sure hope I get a second.
Thank you, Kathy. Is there a second? Leslin.
Mr. Chair and Kathy. Kathy, every time you speak, I wonder who on earth you're talking about. But I do appreciate the recognition of what I do and who I am. And I appreciate that you're so very public about it. And I want people to know that I clearly didn't put you up to it. Because I know, you know, folks will probably think that this has been a plan. I didn't know this was coming. I am surprised and honored. But I also know that my life as it stands right now, my work, the fact that I have a very young family, does not afford me the time to be the chair of this body. What used to be a part-time job, you know, my predecessors have made it much more of a full-time job. And it is. It takes a lot of time. I know that I can't be like Martha and have Peter wake up and see a 2 o'clock and a 4 o'clock email from me, because I just don't have the time. And so with all due respect and humility, I thank you for your nomination. I thank you for your public recognition of me. And you don't make me cry. That was really very sweet. But I will have to decline your nomination for chair of this body, because I know that I do not have the time to be able to do it. But I will promise you that when I decide that I am running for higher office, you will be my speechwriter. And you will be definitely my rah-rah person. Not many people know me. And you have just pretty much captured a lot of who I am for someone who I would say does not know me as well as I thought. So thanks, and thanks to all of you all for at least listening and hearing what Kathy has said. I will continue to serve this body as an elected person for the constituents out there. I'll continue to do what I do in my own quiet, but I think effective way. And I hope that at some point, what you said will have the chance as a full body, especially those of us who've come through some of the discomforts of the last couple of years, to really sit and talk through what matters to all of us. It's something some of us have asked for, and we hope that it will happen. I mediate. It's something I love to do. I've been doing it for well over 20 years. And it's a skill that I hope to continue to bring in everything I do. I am a very down-to-earth, friendly person, and conflict, I see conflict and I see opportunity. So hopefully we'll get through this 2011 with grace and style, and be the shining example we have been for all of Tompkins County elected bodies, because it used to be us. Everyone looked to us. So again, thanks for the great nomination, but regretfully I do have to not accept that or decline your nomination for chair.
Thank you, Leslie. That was very gracious on behalf of both of you. Are there any other nominations from the floor for chair? Hearing none, I will accept a motion to close the nominations. Moved by Will. Is there a second? Seconded by Pat. All those in favor of closing nominations, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. Are there any opposed? It's still unanimous. The name of Martha Robertson has been placed in nomination. I guess we don't have to do this by secret ballot. All those in favor, please raise your hands. Are there any opposed? That would be 13-2. Martha, congratulations. And can you take it from here? By the way, I wanted to... No, go ahead. Do it. I'm sorry that we weren't able to arrange a larger public body for you, Martha. But
we should have put a fracking resolution on you.
Hey, congratulations. You bet.
Thank you very much, Frank, and everyone else for participating in our annual ritual. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Vice chair.
I'm sorry. I see that look, you know. I should have done. I'm sorry. I'd like to open the nominations for the position of vice chair of the legislature. Mike.
In 1994, I came to a class of new folks on this legislature, and with me was one other person here at that time, and that was Dooley Kiefer. And Dooley has served now, this will be her 14th year. No, it'll be my 14th year. It'll be your 16th year, right?
Too many.
More than and she's done a fine job. I think she has shown what a legislator in Tompkins County needs to do and has done the work. Peter, you talked about hard work, and certainly Dooley embodies that. I don't think there's anybody who works any harder than Dooley. And I have never heard her complain about the workload in all those years. Because it's what we do as a legislature. We take on work, we take on assignments, we take on issues, we debate, and we go forward. Dooley has made a mark as the person on this legislature dedicated to the protection of the environment in Tompkins County and the world. She has made a mark as dedicated to good government. Many of the initiatives that we've had to open this legislative process to people, to make it available to the public, to make us a model for other legislatures throughout the state, have had the backing of Dooley and the leadership of Dooley. I believe she has worked well this year as the vice chair with the sitting chair. That's important. I've been vice chair, and I know how it is to be able to work well with a chair, and I know how it is to have been ignored by a chair. So I think it's very important that we see this happen, and I think it would be good for another year for Dooley Kiefer to be our vice chair, and I hope and I'm glad to know that she's interested in doing that. It'll be good for our county. I feel strongly that the rotation of positions is important in this county, whether it's various chairmanship. I think we gather strength by that. But this year, I think it's fine that the team continues. So I'd like to place a nomination for Vice Chair Dooley Kiefer.
Thank you, Mike. Is there a second? Pat?
I'd like to second Dooley's nomination for Vice Chair of this body. As a person who is new on the legislature this year, I have come to greatly appreciate the typically low-key way in which Dooley has helped to ease the transition to being part of the legislature by, when it's appropriate, either being very available to answer questions that I may have had, or when it seems like I might have been not aware of something, or there might be some information that it would be helpful for me to have to offer that information. And I'm very appreciative of that. I think that this has been a very difficult year on a lot of levels, not the least of which is the challenging budget season that we just came through. And we're looking forward this next year to at least as equally a challenging, if not more so, year, I think. And the opportunity to not only for myself, but I think also given the fact that we had, I'm not the only new legislator, but we had a number of new legislators this year, and the opportunity to move forward with the same team and leadership that has been leading very effectively, in my opinion, and doing a very good job, I think is an opportunity that we should take advantage of. I'm very glad that both Martha and Julie are willing to accept this responsibility again this year, and it's an honor and a pleasure to second Julie's nomination.
Thank you, Pat. Are there any other nominations for Vice Chair?
Leslie?
Kathy?
I'd like to take this opportunity to put into nomination the name of Leslie Bean Claiborne for Vice Chair. In the interest of time, I will say that she served capably as Vice Chair in the past. I, like others, have expressed, believe that rotation is a wonderful thing, and I believe that Leslie possesses all the qualities that we would want in a chair and has ably demonstrated them, and that it would be appropriate for us to recognize her. Not only that, she already does a lot of the job of vice chair. There isn't a department head that doesn't know of a crisis that she's averted through helping out. She's doing a lot of it already. It'd be great to have her working directly and openly with the chair rather than having to do it as she's doing it now. I think that we would be showing as a legislature our support for the kind of leadership that Leslie has shown, and I'm proud to second her name and nomination for the position of Vice Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
Is there a second for the nomination? Less than seconds. All right. Are there any other nominations? Is there a motion to close the nominations? Frank moves to close. Julie seconds that. I don't know why. Again, this is one of those things we do once a year, and I guess I'm just like, okay.
Martha, why don't you let me take over?
All right. All in favor of closing nominations for vice chair, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right. Nominations are closed. We have two names, Julie Kiefer and Leslie McBean Claiborne. All in support of Julie Kiefer's nomination for vice chair, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. All for Leslie McBean Claiborne. One, I hope this is six. One, two, three, four, five, six. Dooley's nomination succeeds. Dooley is vice chair of the legislature for 2011. Congratulations, Dooley. Now, proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices, right?
Communications are on the desk.
Thanks, Kathy. I would like to ask for an executive session after our meeting today to discuss labor negotiations, and there are no other items to reorder. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the legislature? I see media out there. Frank?
I have a letter from someone.
Sure, go ahead.
At the appropriate time. Is this?
You might as well go ahead.
I have a letter from an individual who could not be here tonight and asked me to read it into the record. It's regarding Resolution C on our agenda, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law A, amending the county code. It's the one regarding excluding certain commercial traffic. Dear Kathy, this is written to Kathy Covert. Dear Kathy, I likely won't make the meeting this evening, but would you please read this into the record under privilege of the floor? Dear legislators, I would ask that you set a users meeting session to discuss the trucking regulation. Please wait for the affected users to speak before a public hearing is set. Delay isn't going to cause any hardship for the county. Gathering information from other counties would make more sense. The weight limit triggers are way too low as I read this. Consider that ag commodities will go out, but the backhaul may be different. Have you heard any opinion from Ag and Markets, Department of State? This may cost the taxpayers in legal fees. $60 million of ag commodities go out of this county, and likely $200 million pass through each year. I know you exempt ag, but how do you enforce what is in the truck? Pull everyone over? Time equals money. We all want to protect roads, but they are proposed to be used, and users are taxed for their upkeep. Thank you, Lynn Davidson, President, Tompkins County Farm Bureau. Kathy, I'll give you a copy of this.
Thank you, Frank. I think everybody's got that in the red folders. Okay.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Jim?
Yes, I want to say thank you to Frank for his kind comments about the budget and me. You're only as good as the people on your committee, and this year I had a really good committee. We had Peter was new, and Brian was new to Legend, and I think that the five of us worked together pretty well the whole year. And the expanded budget committee, we got to where we needed to get, you know, with a variety of differences and things, and but we ended up with a budget. I appreciate the comments. I appreciate the work that the small committee did, and clearly everyone else around the table, and Joe, of course, and David Squire.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Leslin, then Mike, then Dooley.
Frank mentioned it earlier during his time as temporary chair, but I do want to make a more public acknowledgement, or louder, of our newly elected sheriff, Sheriff Kenny Lansing. I had the opportunity, having heard the announcement on the radio yesterday about his swearing in, to go to the swearing in ceremony, which was very lovely. Aurora always does a wonderful, wonderful job. And so I want to congratulate you, Mr. Sheriff, and welcome you to the folds of the county employment. Look forward to working with you as sheriff, and know that as a legislator, I can speak for myself, that to provide as much moral support. I'm not going to promise financial support because I don't know where you're going, but moral support to help you with the transition. I know that it's been a rough ride, like any other campaign. We all have gone through those kinds of things, but you were successful in the end, and I know that you will work well with your staff at the corrections unit, as well as the civil side of deputies. So thanks for throwing your hat in the ring. Thanks for the integrity that you bring as a person, and look forward to seeing what good work will continue to come out of the Sheriff's Department. So thanks.
Yeah, and Cam, there's a spot on our agenda that says other county staff as recognized by the chair. I just want to warn you, I was going to introduce you and ask you to say a few words, so you got a little bit of time to get ready for that. So.
And thank you, Kathy, for that.
Okay. All right. Any other? I had Mike and Dooley, I think. Is that right?
We had a new governor sworn in yesterday. It was the day before. To borrow a term I always keep in mind, I guess no person is safe as long as the New York State Legislature is in session. And I think this year will be a good example of that. We know we're going to have the fight from day one regarding the tax cap, which people really don't understand. I fully believe that. They want taxes capped. They want taxes lowered. But they don't understand what that means to a municipality like the county, which is that has mandates which require us to use 90% of those funds we raise from real property taxes just to pay those mandates, leaving but 10% plus our sales tax to try to do those things that are supposedly discretionary, like maintaining the roads and having sheriff's patrols on the road. It's going to be a tough year at the state level. We have to keep up the efforts with our state legislators. I'm glad we had a meeting recently with our new federal representative for most of the county, which is Mr. Hanna. I hope that we get to meet with all of the other representatives, elected and reelected, and make sure our points are there for them to understand and to know that the people down here at the levels of providing municipal services have to have the support of the state and federal government to make sure that our people have a safety net for the basic services that they're entitled to. So we'll be watching that. We have to be careful. I watched last night. There was a roundtable on a news program talking about the governors in California, Wisconsin, Ohio, and New York. And they kept coming back to New York and talking about the New York State Legislature as the most dysfunctional legislature there is. That continues to be that case, and until it's cleaned up and they get major changes, either internally, which I'm not very hopeful for, or through the efforts of, say, a constitutional convention, I think we're going to continue to have to suffer under that dysfunction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Dooley, and then Frank, and then Carol.
Thank you. Because we had spent some amount of time at the legislature recently discussing the TMDLs for the Susquehanna Basin, I thought it would be reasonable to let the public know that on December 29th, the official TMDLs were promulgated by EPA. They appeared in the Federal Register. And the EPA actually has acknowledged good programs that we do have in New York State, especially for agriculture. So there were adjustments made to what the earlier reported requirements were. New York State and all the other states had insufficient implementation plans. They all have some problems. But New York came out quite well in the end. We mostly have to worry about wastewater treatment plant effluents, which is interesting. We're just a very small part of the Susquehanna watershed. But I think that all of the research that some legislators did and that we heard from members of the public really did make a difference. And EPA did work with each state's delegation to arrive at a much more reasonable approach. EPA can still step in if we don't meet the absolute standards, but we will have some time to do that. Thanks.
Thank you, Dooley. Frank, and then Carol.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dooley mentioned most of what I was going to say regarding the TMDLs and the Chesapeake, but I wanted also to add that we're not done yet. There'll be some more opportunities for New York State to adjust this. The DEC actually has been very cooperative and very aggressive. I want to thank Pat Pryor with regard to the Ag and Farmland Board, because we did have a discussion there as well as at the Water Resources Council. And you know that we did send a letter off to the EPA, pardon me, during the hearing, asking them to do what Dooley has reported on, to reduce some of the regulations and some of the requirements, and to acknowledge that New York State has done a laudable job so far in trying to achieve the reductions. On a separate matter, I want to congratulate you as a member of the opposing party and congratulate you and Dooley on being reelected to the chairmanship and vice chairmanship. I know that we all look forward to working with you, and I hope that Kathy Covert is going to have Peter Stein's remarks verbatim in the minutes, because a lot of the individual items and accolades that he gave you will be reflected, and your feet are going to be held to the fire. For
right,
sure.
Well, we now know the answer to the question, is the Pope Catholic?
So. The Pope is Catholic. He's also German. But I wanted to add, we look forward to politely sparring from time to time. We do. Duly as well. One last remark. This is under privilege of the floor. I want to remind Carol. Carol mentioned when I was temporarily chair of the board that she was not only impressed but surprised that a Republican read the Times. I wanted to tell you I enjoy the comics the most, and that's section 1 and 3, because often you do get a really good laugh out of the editorial page there. So it's really, really, it's nice for you to acknowledge that. Really, Carol, thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
I know you can't hold back.
Thank you. I do want to thank you for your congratulations, and many thanks to Peter and Julie for all that you said. Thank you. Carol?
Yeah. I'll consider that license to send you articles from time to time, Frank. And for somebody who didn't get an award, great minds think alike, because I wanted to also congratulate those who have stepped up in leadership, and I also just wanted to thank all of you who put yourselves out there, or even considered putting yourselves out there for leadership positions. It isn't easy to do. It does mean putting yourself out there and seeing where the chips fall. While I certainly didn't agree with all that was said in the nominating speeches, all of the good stuff that was said, I agreed with in multiples. And I think that the traits that were brought out about the people who put themselves out there are things that those people are often known for. Not just by the people who nominated them, but among some of the rest of us, or maybe all of the rest of us. So I just want to thank you all and congratulate Dooley and Martha, those of us who've done a lot of work on chairing committees in the past year. That also is not easy to do, and so I appreciate the extra work that people do on behalf of all of us. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Anyone else? All right, we have a special presentation tonight with, I think, Greg Potter leading the conversation. All right.
I'll begin.
Or Kathy Cover and Michelle.
Begin. I'll begin and then
go
Greg
for
will take over.
As many of you, I'm sure, are aware, along with the public, you've noticed a transformation over the last several months in the way legislative documents, including resolutions, agendas, and minutes, are being produced and distributed. This has all been part of a process the Legislature Office has undertaken in collaboration over the last 3 years with the Department of Information Technology Services. We are now at an important stage in the process where we have launched the public meeting portal that provides access to all legislative meeting information, not only to county staff, but to the public as well. This evening, Greg Potter, Director of ITS, will lead you through an overview of the history of this process, where we are now, and future program enhancement opportunities. This lengthy and ongoing project could not have been completed without close collaboration between Legislature Office, ITS, and IQM2, our vendor. It should be particularly noted that the success of this project is due greatly to the leadership and technical assistance provided by ITS. Greg and his staff have been extremely accommodating and helpful during every step of this process. Greg.
Thank you, Kathy. And you have a handout in your packets.
Okay.
Well, to continue on with the theme this evening, I guess to summarize what this project is all about really is taking all the information that gets submitted to agendas and all the decisions that are made as a result of those discussions in committees and at the legislature level, and providing a cohesive system in which all this information is managed and also distributed and then provided for review and access to the public as well in terms of formal public information and records. We first wanted to this evening is just take you through a quick review of the project and where we started, talk a little about where we are now, what we've achieved, and show you and demonstrate to you this evening the web portal, which is the new interface which allows access to all information associated with committee agenda packets as well as the minutes and future schedules of planned meetings.
Can you get a little closer to the microphone?
Certainly, I'm sorry. Thanks. So beginning in 2007, ITS began a collaborative project with the legislature's office to address one particular problem that they were having, and that was a backlog of the annual journal of proceedings. And that's a compilation of all of the records associated with the legislature's meetings during the course of a year. And it was a very labor-intensive project to produce that book, and more importantly, to index all the information associated within that document. And we had a backlog of about 18 years' worth of those records that are required per New York State law to produce. So we began looking at that and really quickly came to the determination that that was just a symptom of the problem and that we really need to investigate a little bit further what was leading to that, and not just at staff level, but is there a better process, a better system that could be evaluated or put in place to help with a long-term solution? So we weren't just looking at a short-term fix. We kind of really stepped back, looked at all the types of documents and the methods of what were being produced in the agenda items that were being submitted. We quickly realized that we had other issues associated with the fact that there wasn't a very standardized format or process as that information was either submitted to the legislature's department and as agendas and resolutions were produced. And across committee levels, you would have seen and probably noticed if you were a member of the legislature in the past, a lot of variation in the format and the style of those documents. We also realized that there was, and as a department head, I can attest to this one, that there was an excessive amount of time spent in the retrieval of records information in the past. If as a department head, as an example, I was looking for all the resolutions that were related to a specific project, it was very difficult to find that information. I would get frustrated and end up calling over here and asking somebody from this office to do it, and they were spending a great deal of amount of time searching and trying to find that information that was requested, either by the public or by staff members. Reliance on paper for distribution of meeting agenda packets is, we've got some statistics to share with you this evening, but of course you can imagine the volume of paper would have gone into the production of those agenda packets across committees and the legislature in the past compared to the approach that we've taken as an electronic packet of information in today's system. Also, the last point here is that, some of you can appreciate this, is that deadlines for submitting agenda materials were often not met. There was a lot of variation in when some bill of information was occurring. The newer system provides a little bit more clarity on when items are required to be submitted and included on agenda for future packet distributions. So those were really some of the more important issues that led to the need to evaluate how Tompkins County manages the information related to meetings within our organization. Okay. Project accomplishments to date. We started the project, again, as I stated, kind of looking at a long-term solution. In order to do that, we completed what is known as a business process analysis, and we did that in-house. And so we really kind of sat down, documented all the activities within the legislature's office, how they manage the documents, the formats, the styles, and produced an output of a document that would help us make better decisions on a future solution as we move forward. So we did a lot of work to produce that document. From the use of that document or development of that document, we then turned around and used that to submit a New York State Archives grant request and received that grant for an amount of $60,160 to implement a new records management system. We turned that then into a request for proposals and went through a very lengthy review of alternatives of software and solutions and chose a company which is known as IQM2, which is a company, a New York State company based out of Long Island. That company is specifically focused on the management of minutes and related public minute information and systems, which we'll get into in a little bit more detail. We completed the backlog of journal proceedings that we were in a backlog for the previous 18 years and worked with the legislature's office to really produce those booklets and get those published as the first step. And then we took it a step further in working with the county clerk's office. We actually completed the scanning or the digitization of all previous legislature minutes dating back to 1865. So those have all been scanned and now are available electronically. I'll talk a little bit more about that and the variations of that. Prior to 1865, there are older types of documents that are handwritten. We haven't scanned those yet. It's a little bit different type of a project in the scanning solution that we need to look forward to get those completed as the next step. Installed hardware and software, completed end-user training, and that end-user training was completed by county staff, primarily by this department, by the legislature's office, and one IT staff. So we worked with all the departments and trained over 40 individuals across the county for the use of the new system. We implemented the system and went live on January 1st of 2010. So we have now a history of 1 year's worth of complete use of the system for all committees and the legislature within the software and the system. Recently, and what we'll talk about and show you tonight, is the release of the web-based portal for access to the information, which is part of the system. And most importantly, as an IT director, this last one, is the software administration daily end-user support has been successfully transferred from ITS to the legislature's office. When I can say that about a project, the project is a success, and this is one of those cases. So due diligence here with this department, they've worked diligently and put a lot of effort to get the system configured and working for their use, and it's taken a lot of effort. It was a gutsy decision. We did it. We're happy we did it, and we've got a lot to look forward to in the future. Okay, next slide. Just quickly some really results, just to get into some specifics. So we've standardized all the processes and have gained a lot of efficiencies in the production and distribution of agendas and minutes. We've gone through, the traditional approach to distributing information in paper packets, which many of you have seen, to a system of sending out an email with an attachment as a large PDF, which had its own level of complications, to now the distribution of the information via email with a link back to the portal that points you right to the information associated with that particular agenda and the information about that agenda, and it allows the user then to choose whether or not they would like to print the material or select the pages of the material that they find of value or use that they need to print in preparation for meetings. The next one is a biggie, and we're looking at these numbers today, and we're quite surprised. Reduction in the use and handling of paper and copying costs. And when we talk about this, there's two levels of this. There's direct cost, and there's the time that somebody spends at a copier to do this work as well. So as an example, in the printing budget for the department in 2007 was $7,860. In 2011, we're looking at a budget of $3,687. So a big reduction just in the cost of the printing. Doesn't include time. And secondly, I think, which is a much more important statistic, is really the volume of copied paper used from this office. In 2009, there was a total of 83,652 sheets of piece of paper went through their copy. In 2010, for the full year in which we implemented new software, only 31,220. So a drastic reduction in the volume of paper from this office. Alleviated a lot of the workload pressures, which has allowed staff to assume additional responsibilities and take on the additional roles for managing the committees that in the past they had not managed. So that shifted in this last year. Customized workflow and approval processes, and the tracking of project-based information and audit trail. Let me talk a little bit more specific about these individually. Within the software, we have the ability now to allow for workflow and an electronic approval system. So if there's an agenda, a type, or a resolution that requires approval first at the finance director level, the personnel director level, or at the county administrator level, we can force that approval first through those individuals prior to it proceeding to an agenda or for their submittal of approval. So if there are policies that are put in place, we can hopefully enforce those policies based on this. And there are some examples of forms that are in place now that were used in the past that we tried to mimic within the software. Tracking of project-based information is another great strategy for us, I think, as well, in the fact that once we, if we know of a large capital project, let's take as an example the new COFA project, the Office for Aging, and the MOVE, we know that there's a lot of information and decisions that are made about that project that go through various committees and various levels of decisions. We can now assign a code that is associated with that project for any of the materials submitted for it, and then then easily retrieve it in the future as one set of information. So it's one packet of information associated with the entire project from the system. And also there's a complete audit trail, so you can see the history of decisions that are made throughout the various formats of whatever it might be, whether it's, as an example, a resolution. The improvements for the production of annual books of proceedings is much more automated now, and we have not yet tested that this year, but within the system and with software, there's the ability to produce that, hopefully with much less of a manual effort. It should be rather quick, we hope. That'll be our next test of the software. And the last one is what we'll show here this evening, and that's kind of just the restructuring and improvements for public access to the legislative documents through the web-based meeting portal, which is a part of the software. Okay. And I will give a brief kind of overview of the portal. And then Michelle's going to get into a little bit more of the details here within the portal and how it's used. From the main legislature's site now, there's a link, which is the meeting agendas and minutes, which sends you directly to the web portal, which allows access to the minute and the meeting information. We have a software upgrade that's coming here in the near future, which should make this much faster.
Great. I'm sorry. For our viewers at home, yes. Can you just tell people the URL?
If they go to the tompkins-co.org/legislature website, there's a link directly from that location. Okay. Just quickly... You can certainly take the opportunity to explore this if you haven't already, but just across the top there are a series of tabs, which is the home tab, which is the page that you're looking at right now. There's a tab which to the right of that, which is a search tab that gives you a little bit more functionality so you can get into some more specific queries to look for information. There's a calendar tab that identifies all the meetings that are scheduled throughout the course of the upcoming year or in the past. A notices tab, which is for public notices. However, we have not implemented the use of that tab, so those are kind of official public notices. And the contact us tab, which we'll show you here, is one that lists specifically all of the contacts within the department or who's responsible for the committees and who are the representatives serving on those committees. Now, the other point, too, is that we've implemented the portal. There's still some customization that we're working on, and we're, still cleaning things up. So it isn't perfect yet, but it was close enough that we felt comfortable with releasing it. The next level of detail here that we'll get into is just a quick use of the portal to show a particular agenda. Is that correct, Michelle? Is that where you'd want to go next for the...
We're just going to show where the agenda is in a minute.
Yeah, let's do that. So as an example, on the right-hand side, then here's the meeting calendar, and what you're seeing are just the legislature's meetings that have been scheduled or have been held in the past. You'll see a column that says agenda and one that says minutes. And so if the agenda is published, it automatically gets pushed out to this web portal. In the past, it was a manual effort to publish that to the internet. And that includes now all the agenda, but also the agenda packet. So any information that gets submitted by the end users as part of that packet now gets published through this system and is available electronically. After the minutes then are approved, they get published as well automatically, and that's in the second column, which is the minutes. So we'll just show an example of what the December 7th, 2010 format for that meeting looked like. And let's do it in the HTML format. Yes, please, in that one. And kind of give you a little bit of a preview of this. And there's two different formats in the interface, too. One is a PDF. You can download as a PDF, or you can view it in within the software within the HTML format.
We have a dialogue.
Did that not? Click on that again. Okay, this is always. Try a different one. I'm not sure what's happening here, but it's always the concern of live demos.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the software upgrade, Greg. I was having some problems today.
Here we go. So this is just a version then of the agenda. And the agenda packet is at the top, and this is the format of that. And then listed below, if you see a link to any of the items, that means that there's additional information that's associated with the submittal of that particular topic on the agenda. And if you click on one of those, you'll see the results of that. And this one is in a Word format. And this is the would have been a document likely submitted by the department, directly by the department into the system. So this all gets now submitted by each department into the system instead of emailing or sending paper or whatever the case may be, as we've managed this in the past. So there's a lot more to the portal stuff. And there's one quick query just to give you another example of the sophistication of how you can search items. And we've got one example, and then we'll wrap this up. So Michelle's going to just run a quick query on a resolution with the text string. So within the body of any resolution that includes the text of bylaws. It could be anything. You could choose. It'll run a query and produce a result of any resolutions that have in the past that are within the system that have the language of the word bylaws within them. So the approach then makes it much easier for people to search and find information that's specific to topics that they may have an interest in.
Last night I searched. I was looking for a resolution,
No, this is
energy and I can't remember what it was.
No, this is kind of
I found it in one click.
We were playing around this today all day, using this and testing out. So
it really does work.
Yes, it does. To the audience out there, it really does work. So let's just move on. But it does work, and the results pop up in a list, and then you would select from the list. So while you're working on that, Michelle, maybe we should just kind of go back in and close up the last slide here.
I have a technical question.
Yes.
When our staff posts documents that are clickable there,
yes.
Do they get asked to do so in a doc format versus a docx format, which isn't
The doc format is openable by a lot of people's software, text software, text reader software.
The end users can submit in either in any format within any Microsoft Word Office format. But the county is still at prior to 2007, so typically it's a .doc, a doc format.
Yeah, I would just ask that some thought be given if you update our software to whether the general public is there yet as you do it.
Well, the output for the general public typically is going to be in a PDF format or HTML. Okay. Yep. Okay. There we go. Thank you. So it was an internet connection issue with the laptop. thank you, Nathan. You want a job? So there is the results of the resolution request for any information associated with bylaws. If you click on one of those, then you can drill down a little bit deeper and get the actual resolution and the history of that resolution as well.
Did you put it?
There you go. So you'll see the information at the top, including the results of the votes. Keep on scrolling down, please. The history of when it was submitted, changes that were made, and then below that is any information that was submitted as part of the resolution and the actual body of the resolution itself. Okay. So let's move on and to the last slide. Okay.
Next steps.
Do we not have next steps?
Next steps.
One more. So just quickly, we still have work to do. We know that, including testing of the portal. The first thing that we're looking at really is we're still working with IKM2, the company, to identify and enhance with as a partner with the company. We have a number of suggested changes that we're putting forth to them that we've identified and working with them now. The next thing that we're looking at as an option and which exists now is actually the self-registration of the public to receive agenda packet information automatically. So they can self-register, give us their email address, and we'll automatically send out the information as it's posted live. We haven't deployed that yet because we're still testing the portal, but it exists within the software now. We have the ongoing training and administrative support to staff in the county. That'll be a continuing reality and one that we've accepted and I think are doing quite well with. Integration with Laserfiche is another project we're going on. Laserfiche is software that the county uses to manage other electronic format documents for long-term records retention purposes. And so we're actually duplicating the output of a lot of these records at the end of the year and publishing them over to Laserfiche for long-term records retention and management purposes in electronic format. So it's duplicated in two systems as well. And then future possibilities here, when we negotiated the contract with IQM2, they actually have a suite of modules within the software. We were able to negotiate the complete solution of all of the modules, but we've only implemented one of them. The two others that exist within the software are MediaTrack, which is really an electronic audio and video streaming solution within the package that allows people to... You could actually identify sections of meetings within a video to watch as opposed to the entire video, which is what we have now on the Internet. And then eBoardroom, which is a kind of electronic voting solution and system that kind of integrates the management of meetings electronically with the electronic use of voting, which is then projected and displayed at the same time. Questions, comments?
Thank you very much to all of you who've worked so hard on this. And I've been around when I've seen Michelle bring other staff in. Michelle is the trainer and really the jockey of this whole thing. And I really want to congratulate everybody who's worked so hard on it, and especially kudos to Michelle. So, and it really does work. It worked at home last night. It was great. Frank, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, just a quick one. Greg, the good job. This is really exciting stuff.
The $60,000 initial grant from State Archives, is there a an opportunity to apply for additional money for some of the last slides upgrades in this?
The whole New York State Archives grant program, as you probably are aware, has changed drastically and has been reduced. So the opportunity now only exists for the one application per entity per year. And typically those applications within Tompkins County are used for more traditional county clerk use for scanning of records and so forth that are in the long-term retention program. But certainly the answer to the question is yes. The priority, though, right now is for county clerk use.
Anyone else? Dooley?
I have no idea what your suggested changes you're going to be taking to the vendor, but I couldn't help but notice in your example, looking for CJATI, only the C is capitalized. The others are lowercase, and that looks funny to me. Is that something that they can handle?
That's the staff. Yeah. Staff input that information. That doesn't have anything to do with our company.
Okay.
It's an entry of the end user. So we would have to somehow train them and better enforce their entry of into the system.
Carol.
Yeah, I just two quick points for looking. Well, one for looking into further. I noticed that the copy volume. It's impressive the amount that we've been able to reduce on the copy volume. I would want to know if there's been an impact on staff. I mean, I know there's an impact on us having to print out some things at home from all the electronic communication, things you want to work on and scribble on. So I would want to know at some point we should maybe look at is that impacting our staff. And then back when you mentioned that this was a gutsy decision on the part of the legislative staff, I just want to know whether you let them know that at the time.
I'll let them answer that question.
Yes, we knew what we were getting into and we were very excited about the project.
Okay, and those copy stats, is that just for this office?
That's just, okay. Yes, correct, just this office.
Okay. Anyone, Kat?
Carol just reminded me of the question I had as we were going through. Will we still then be getting hard copy of the agendas for our meetings? Is that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You will continue to.
And I will tell you, I've had... Sometimes when I've gotten a document or I've gotten a packet or something, and I've shipped off an email to Karen, for example, and said, could you please print a copy of this and put it in my box? So, you know, if there's something that you really need, that's certainly an option. Anyone else? Great. Thank you very much. It's really a great tool, and I invite everybody to poke around on it when you have a chance.
Can you say what that connection is again?
It's www.tompkins-co.org/legislature. And there'll be a link off of that page.
So the public.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have one chair's appointment tonight, one appointment on the consent agenda. Patricia O'Rourke to the Tompkins County Youth Services Board. And as far as my report, first I want to thank all of you, thank all my fellow legislators, and especially Peter and Dooley for the kind words. Thank you for your confidence and support this year. I look forward to working with each of you in 2011. To our department heads and staff, and Joe, it's a great privilege to work with all of you. Thanks to your skill and dedication, I have great confidence that we'll be able to tackle the challenges ahead of us this year. So instead of a typical chair's report tonight, I'd like to take a few minutes to reflect briefly on 2010 and especially to look ahead to 2011. At our next legislature meeting, I will announce the new committees and tasks for each group. It may seem like all we did in 2010 was the budget, but that's not at all true. At our next meeting, Joe will present a summary of the county's accomplishments during last year. It's an impressive list. In 2010, our budget deliberations were more intense and difficult than ever before. But we found bipartisan compromise with a budget that, frankly, requires more of our municipalities and offers less to our constituents. In 2010, we made do with 2% fewer employees than the year before, and this year we're shrinking our roster by another 26 positions through retirements and layoffs. In short, we've been responsible, deliberative, and responsive to our public, but that will probably not get us through the next year or two or three. We collectively shudder to contemplate what is next, specifically to contemplate the impact of new cuts and new restrictions from Albany. More than any other level of government, of local government, counties are an extension of state government. In fact, we're captive to decisions made in Albany. Our codependent relationship permeates every program we operate and touches every worker we employ. If it's possible that that relationship could become even more intertwined, it will this year. The elephant in the room is the property tax cap, so we can't talk about our internal local goals for 2011 without talking about this issue. Governor Andrew Cuomo has made some important moves in his first days in office to open up state government and increase transparency. He says he'll listen to the people. So as part of this legislature that represents 100,000 New Yorkers, I'd like to offer a few thoughts to our new governor tonight. First, yes, rebuild the people's trust in government. This was a cornerstone of your inaugural speech, as it needed to be. Without the people's trust, government just doesn't work. As you set out to make change, move boldly but not impetuously. There are good reasons for many state policies and programs, even mandates, and an overbroad sweep may have unintended and unwanted consequences. Your signature idea, consolidation of local governments, is being tried around the state, but it's meeting with very mixed results. Don't get hung up on eliminating layers of government. There are other ways to save money and even improve services without the political friction of dissolving local governments. Some suggestions. Tompkins County's new health insurance consortium is a joint venture of all of our county's municipalities that will save a great deal of money. Encourage every county to establish a consortium. Allow small businesses and nonprofits to join as well. Our system of countywide assessment provides much greater accuracy and consistency compared to the inefficient and balkanized system in most other counties. It also removes politics from this essential governmental function. It's time to change the antiquated assessment system throughout the state. Green loans. We'd like to get started making loans to property owners to invest in conservation and renewable energy improvements, but state and federal barriers are in the way. Help us overcome these barriers so we can start greening our buildings, helping businesses and homeowners save money, and creating new jobs. Respect and work with New York's counties. Enable counties to make our own local taxing decisions. Allow us the home rule authority to set local sales and other local taxes up to established limits without requiring Albany's approval every year or two. And please don't balance the state budget simply by shifting costs to us. Now about that property tax cap. Make no mistake, we agree that property taxes are too high. But a simple property tax cap will leave in place the inequities of our system, which relies on that regressive tax to pay for public schools and health care for the poor. There's a fundamental difference between the state paying for service and local governments paying for it. In New York, the state is the only entity that collects income tax, so a person pays state taxes according to their ability to pay. This is not true of property tax, and it's at the core of why people believe it's so unjust and why it is so unjust. Only when New York takes full financial responsibility for its own decisions, for its own mandates, will the injustice of property taxes be relieved, and then property taxes will actually fall. In its December 21st editorial, the New York Times urged you, Governor Cuomo, to focus on the underlying reasons property taxes keep rising, rather than push a feel-good cap that will devastate our counties and schools. I couldn't agree more. During the campaign, you talked constantly about a tax cap, but rarely about mandate relief. In your first days in office, you have been quoted as favoring a cap with mandate relief. That's certainly good news to counties, but please define mandate relief. Rather, please invite counties to work with you on this absolutely critical question. As NYSAC's Commission on Medicaid documented, these problems cannot be solved without counties at the table. Because of these mandates created, designed, and regulated in Albany, counties cannot control the majority of their budgets. NYSAC has documented that 9 major mandates account for 90% of property tax levies around the state. A tax cap without mandate relief ignores the causes of high property taxes and is irresponsible and hurtful to the people of New York. It would force us to pay for the spiraling costs of state-mandated programs and pensions by cutting locally important services that aren't mandated. Who would care? Wouldn't our citizens be delighted that their property taxes would be controlled? Well, let's see what such a cap would really mean. Because of growing mandate costs, we had to cut about $2 million from our 2011 budget just to keep our levy under 6%. If we had a 2% cap, as was proposed, we would have to cut another $1.5 million from our local spending. Some examples of how we could have met that cap. In addition to the cuts we did make, eliminate all funding for public transportation, the Human Rights Commission, the Human Services Coalition, and the programs that serve at-risk kids in rural parts of the county. Or we could have cut our highway budget by another 37%, or our sheriff's patrol by 40%, or the public library by 65%. Or we could lay off another 25 people when we should be most worried about unemployment. That's how we would meet a 2% cap. Would our residents cheer at those choices? Is that what they want? I don't think so. About the mother of all mandates, Medicaid, Governor, we have to talk. About half the states require their counties to contribute something to Medicaid, but all far less than New York. There's wide variability across counties, but if you calculate the per capita cost on average, the county's share in Florida works out to a penny per person. In California, the second highest state after New York, that figure is $27 per person. In New York, each person pays $368 for Medicaid through county property taxes on average. There's something seriously structurally wrong with this picture. We know that private and public health insurance costs are linked. Medicaid is expensive because the costs of all health insurance and health care itself are high. How should we address this underlying reason our biggest mandate is so expensive? As our intermunicipal health insurance consortium has shown, the bigger the group, the broader the base on which to spread the costs, and the lower the cost for each individual. Let's take that simple idea to its logical conclusion, single payer for New York. In a 2009 report, the Urban Institute studied 4 models of insurance and concluded that a single payer system would save New York $20 billion a year by 2019. That report got no attention. We cannot afford to ignore any possible solution to our problems, including this one. However, this gets us back to the beginning of my message to you, Mr. Cuomo. New Yorkers have to be able to trust that their government is competent and honest and has their collective best interests at heart. While I personally believe that single payer could transform New York and that this could be the right moment to embark on that transformation, the work to rebuild trust must happen first. So in honor of our relationship and in the hope of influencing decisions made 160 miles from here, I humbly offer these thoughts as you begin your tenure leading our state. P.S. Governor Cuomo, the topic of gas drilling will need a whole letter of its own. I don't have time for that tonight. So my fellow legislators, thank you again for your support. I pledge to do all I can to lead with renewed focus and energy. We have a lot on our plates this year, but there's plenty of talent, compassion, and smarts among us to address the challenges we face. Let's forge ahead together. Thank you. So that is my report for tonight. County Administrator, Joe.
No report tonight.
All right. County Attorney.
No report.
Finance Director, David Squires.
Happy New Year. I just want to
point out that almost every municipality except the town of Enfield has an interest in an auction that's being held this weekend. If you've seen the TPs around the county, well, it's an interesting story. There's a local investor who has bought properties in foreclosure over time, and he's liquidating all his properties. There's like 20 properties. Just so happens that these 20 properties, some of which have TPs on them, some of them are on, you know, they're really unusable pieces of property. This is Ithaca Alley, which the county once owned, that is a sort of a nuisance to anybody who owns it, the entity, because of upkeep and things like that. But the reason why I point this out, every town, there's one in every town, and all, there's 22 properties being auctioned, and 20 of them are in county's foreclosure, the county's foreclosure petition currently, owing the county approximately $44,000 in taxes. So in one, we have an interest in this auction, and hopefully the properties will be sold and the taxes will be recovered, and indirectly the county will benefit. Unfortunately, if the properties don't sell at auction, then there'll be a further discussion at the county level, because they are in foreclosure for non-payment of taxes. And the $44,000 in taxes represents 65% of that $44,000 represents monies we have paid to municipalities, all those taxes. So it's a dilemma which we need to get out of. That's one of the unfortunate things, the burdens of having to enforce taxes and to guarantee them. So I'm leaving this to the clerk, but it lists the properties that are up, and many of them I know personally because I sold them at auction.
Thank you, David. Nathan, and then Carol?
Yeah, I'm sorry, did I miss something? What are the significance of TPs? What's the significance?
I think that they're just to promote, because if you see the TP, they actually, at one point, they were trying to get these properties exempt.
Oh.
I thought maybe there was some symbolic sense that that was part of the trying to get the properties tax exempt, but they haven't gotten anywhere with that.
Right. Yes, a note to the TV people. You're
but nobody's living in them, as
yeah,
far as I know.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, good. All right, good. All right.
Rental.
Yeah.
Carol? I'm sorry. Could you please just clarify the statement that you made about the alley?
Well, the county owned the alley at one time. We acquired it through foreclosure, and we sold it at auction several years ago for, I think, about $100. And the taxes had not been paid on it since then. So the procedure is that the legislature will have to make a decision whether or not we foreclose on the unpaid taxes. In many cases, a property may be more costly to own a property, so the legislature has the ability not to foreclose and take it off the tax rolls completely. But it does create sort of an orphan with no body responsible for it.
Thank you. Frank?
Can you say where Ithaca Alley is?
Ithaca Alley, Carol probably can describe it more accurately than myself. It's in her district.
It's not in your district. It is in between State Street and Eastwood Avenue. Goes for one block east and west of the area that is bounded by Woodcrest Avenue and Cornell Street, but close to Eastwood Avenue.
Jim?
I still live on it. Interesting place.
Living in a
teepee? No. I had a house there.
So the issue with it is that it is basically used as a private driveway, maintained, plowed, etc., by the residents who adjoin the alleyway, but it has been owned separately these last few years.
Thank you, David. And Sheriff Lansing, you want to come into the microphone? Welcome, and I hope your first days have been okay.
Hi, thank you. I look forward to working with this body. I'm really excited about the 2 days that we've been spending together with the staff right now already, and some of the ideas that they've already presented to me to address saving money and finding other ways to get materials that we need. I had several things presented to me today already. But first, I'd like to thank those that took the time after the election to meet with me from this body to discuss various things that you want to know and wanted me to know. And I thank you for that, and I look forward to the rest of you meeting with me individually or together in groups to discuss things that you want to see from the sheriff, the new sheriff, and expect. I understand it's going to be a transition that will be hard for some of us to get along with. We had a sheriff here for 12 years, and you worked with him, and I'm hoping that you'll extend that to me also. I've already met with several department heads before I took office in various aspects of the county, police and some of our county departments. I met with those heads ahead of time on my time. I went to Albany for a couple days with the undersheriff, who is Derek Osborne, if you did not see that already, who was our captain here at the sheriff's department. I made Bob Latman, who has been a member of the department for a long time and was a sergeant, I made him the captain to take Bob's place. I always believe truly in promoting within the department. If you have the people that are there that can carry out those duties, and those two gentlemen are more than capable of representing our department, because they've already shown that with their years of service already and the commitment that they've had. So the other departments, one of the things that we've already done with some of the other police departments is we've already started to talk about joint training. That obviously saves money when we can put the two departments or three departments together to do some training. That's going to start taking place already. And we've looked at some grants already, and we've also looked at some other ways to maybe purchase some equipment from money that we got from seizures that'll help us even be able to address more abilities to get more seizure money. And so those are some of the things that we've done already. I thank you, and I do look forward to working with you, and I welcome any of you to call me, stop by at any time. My door is always open. So I spent the weekend up there getting ready so that on Monday I could, you know, start with business, and we spent the weekend getting moving into the office, and that was very successful, and Monday we hit the ground running, and I've been into the jail. I met with about at least a dozen corrections officers before the first of the year. They came out and met with me one-on-one. I met with the chief corrections of the jail, Debbie Niemeyer. We had a great conversation. She already called me today from her office while I was in my office to tell me something that she was going to implement tomorrow morning from one of my suggestions, and it's a great training that she's going to implement with her people inside that she and some of her staff members came up with. So things are already started, and I'm very happy with that. So I thank you, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much, and I know that all our department heads will sort of be eager to help in with any information that you need, and obviously working with Joe and David and Jonathan is really going to be sort of your main crew here. Are there any questions for the sheriff? Okay. Well, congratulations on your election and on joining us, and we wish you all the best of luck, and we look forward to working together.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Okay. We have the consent agenda. Two resolutions. Resolution A, if there's anything reason to take them off, please let me know. Resolution A, to amend resolution number 6 of January 19, 2010, determination and certification of county clerk's allowance, annual expenses for administering mortgage tax. And resolution B, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Frank moves, Kathy seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right, thank you very much. First committee, Dooley Kiefer, Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure.
Thank you, Martha. The Facilities Committee will be meeting this Friday at 9:30. We had hoped we could cancel the meeting, but we're
informed by highway staff that they are ready to make a presentation on Hanshaw Road. So the meeting is on. And I have, looks like, one resolution, Resolution C. Should I answer any questions first, or should I go to the
Sure, resolution? Any questions on Dooley's report? Okay, go ahead.
Resolution C, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law A of 2011, amending the county code in relation to temporarily...
There's a revised version.
In relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain commercial slash industrial traffic that would materially injure county roads. It is revised version, and I move that.
Is there a second? Mike seconds that. Do you want to say, introduce?
I want to say something about it. This has been being looked at and talked about for certainly more than a year now. We all agree it's important that localities do something to prepare for what could be heavy industrial use from hydrofracking if and when that starts in this state. And there are various ways to possibly protect our roads. But state law is sort of, it divides things up into fractions, which make it hard to address things in a sensible way. And our county attorney has worked with the Council of Governments and with other attorneys, certainly for more than a year now, trying to come up with something that would be appropriate for us to do. And thanks to government operations determination to move this forward, along with facilities, we have something before us. But I'd like to ask Jonathan to give us the context for where we got to this particular resolution, if you don't mind.
Sure. This is a little bit of history and a little complicated. The whole issue began to surface when, you know, I'm sure you're all familiar with the fracking issue and the release by DEC of the draft generic environmental impact statement. And it got a lot of municipalities, including not just the county, but almost every municipality or every municipality within the county, concerned about the effect of the traffic generated by this activity on municipal roads, both village, town, county. And as some of you could imagine, that the quantity and the size of traffic could have very significant impact on roads, particularly smaller roads. Interestingly, the state law on gas drilling, as well as the state law on mining, actually both reserve all rights to permit the activity to the state, but they specifically exclude roads and leave to municipalities the right to govern their own roads, which does leave to the question of just what rights do municipalities such as counties have to govern their own roads. And as Dooley was referring, the laws on this are not very clear at all, let's put it that way. And combined with the fact that there is a state law which basically says that if a municipality is not authorized to govern their roads in this way, in a particular way, they can't do it. And this has been held when municipalities such as counties have tried to put tolls on roads. Courts have said you can't do it. So the issue came up initially as well, counties and municipalities can by law govern their roads to protect their roads from this traffic in theory, but what can municipalities do? So more than a year ago, as Dooley pointed out, TCOG started meeting, and I was in a group with TCOG. They asked me to join to come up with ideas of how we would deal with the issue of impact of fracking on our roads. And it wasn't just fracking, it's other major commercial activities could have the same impact. And so I went through actually several versions of trying to draft laws. My initial law I drafted and we discussed, and it went to the Association of Towns, and they thought that it probably wouldn't pass legal muster, and sent us back, or sent me back at least, trying to think of some way to draft a law which would be safe, well, maybe not safe, but least likely to be successfully legally challenged. So what I drafted here is sort of unique in the sense that there is a law that allows a county highway manager to close a road to high volume traffic and on a temporary basis, and then allow permitting for exclusions. So I drafted a law which closely followed that law, that state law, on the theory that no one could say, well, you're not allowed to do this because there it is in the state law. And it was somewhat unique, and no one else has a law like this. But interestingly, the State Association of Towns also has attorneys working on it, and they subsequently came up with a similar law. Theirs is short. It's only a couple of paragraphs. It's not as detailed as this. But this is probably as good an attempt to govern our laws, to govern our roads and to try to prevent the damage to roads which could happen from either fracking or other activities which involve a lot of traffic. A couple important things about the law is that it only governs high volume, what we call high frequency, high impact truck traffic, which we define as trucks which have more than 10 trips a day for more than 3 days a week, for trucks having more than 20 tons. And I spent a lot of time with both the highway manager and Ed Marks, who, as you know, is the Commissioner of Planning and was the Commissioner of Public Works, trying to think of what the criteria is that would only cover this type of activity that would have a significant threat to our roads. Agriculture is specifically excluded. I noticed that the memo that Frank read, and I guess was in all our packets, I don't see that as a concern because the way the traffic is defined, it would not include any such agricultural activities, which even if they weren't specifically excluded, just wouldn't meet these criteria. It's really only mining, fracking, and very major construction projects that would be governed by this. And what it would do is basically allow the county highway manager to shut off a road to such high volume traffic and establish a permit system. And as part of the permit system, we would make a determination of the effect, or the highway manager would make a determination of the potential impact on our roads and require a bond. The bond could, in theory, would be related to the potential damage to the road, which involves somewhat complicated analysis, but we have a lot of data on the condition of our roads, and it should be, we should be able to make a determination on a case-by-case basis of what the potential for damages are. Obviously, today it's just to set the public hearing, and I know this was somewhat a long explanation, but somewhat complicated law trying to address a problem, or potential problem, which really hasn't ever been satisfactorily addressed by any municipality before. So I hope that wasn't too long-winded. It probably was.
That was very helpful, Jonathan. Did I see Mike's hand up before?
Not yet.
Okay. Nathan, Patton, and Peter.
All right. Thanks. I think that this is I first off want to thank all the work that the respective Facilities and Government Operations Committee did on this. Jonathan, thank you for all your work and that great explanation. I think that I'm glad we're going to public hearing with this, and I think this is really important. And I think that which really hits the main point of this, which is in the summary of this actual county code, which is that the intent is to protect the public roads from damage. I mean, that's really it. That's the big thing. But especially with gas drilling coming into the community, how big can that damage be? And so I decided to look up some numbers on just the weight of water and the weight of vehicles.
know, and just to give you an example, right, if you were to take like a Ford F-150 truck, right, that's about 5,000 pounds, right? And that, so that's a bigger vehicle, right? And, you know, a normal road with something that big still over time degrades, it erodes, it gets damaged. Now, if we take one of these water tankers, smaller ones being about 5,000 gallons up to as big as 9,000 gallons, you're talking a single truck being between 41,700 pounds to 75,060 pounds, right? That much weight. Can you imagine that much weight? I mean, compared to only 5,000 pounds of a Ford F-150. And in addition to that, for every single one of these wells, I was looking up, and there's so many different places that cite this. I found this one from Vanity Fair, you know, in an article that was really good in Vanity Fair. And they said that the average well takes 3 to 8 million gallons in order to for that hydrofracking well to be created. And so if you were to take that 41,000 pounds and put that into 3 to 8 million gallons, we're talking 600 to 1,600 trips of a 41,000 vehicle for a single well on our roads. And so it makes perfect and absolute sense that we would have permits for this, and that, you know, if we need to, that we need that would we would create a system in which this could be paid for. So I think this is a great step, and I really appreciate all the work that's been done on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Pat, Peter, then Frank.
I just wanted to let my colleagues know that when this memo from, or this email came through from Lynn Davidson this afternoon, I called him. He lives in Lansing, and we had a good conversation. There was some information that I was able to share with him in terms of background that I think, I don't think that it totally resolved his concern that this might pass legal muster or that there might be something about it that would have unintended consequences. But there were several very specific points which I was able to share with him, which were very, I think, reassuring. One of the questions that he asked was, well, what if a farmer were to take a load of some kind of agricultural commodity and drive to New York or New Jersey and deliver it and then bring something back that had not, and on the trip back, the load had nothing to do with agriculture. Would that then not qualify for the agricultural operations exemption? And I explained to him my understanding, and then I checked it with Jonathan when I came in tonight, was that anything that has typically been, over time, a regular part of agricultural operations would be excluded. And Jonathan assured me that, in fact, it would be. So that the kind of situation that he was concerned about would certainly be included in the exclusion. Another thing, he had, when he saw a copy of this at the Ag and Farmland Protection Board meeting, he had misread it, and he thought that we were excluding fracking, the well drilling. And so he thought that that would not be included. When I explained to him that no, it was just the opposite, then he found that very reassuring too. So I just wanted to share that with people.
Thank you, Pat. And I would just point out, especially for the public, the first definition in the law itself, high frequency, high impact truck traffic is, that is, the traffic to be regulated by this law is traffic to or from a single project that generates more than 10 truck trips per day for more than 3 days in a week, any consecutive 7-day period, involving trucks with a gross weight that exceeds 20 tons truck and load combined. So obviously a single trip, such as what Lynn described, would not be included in this at all. Peter.
I certainly support the intent of this, but I have a concern that I'd like to express. I've certainly heard about this issue and this possibility of dealing with the damage from the fracking operations for about 2 years now, at least 2 years I've heard about this. And I've heard about people saying, yeah, that's one of the things you can do is to write legislation that require bonds and regulate the traffic, the heavy traffic that comes along with gas drilling. And the other thing I heard is that if you write something like that, you're very likely to be sued. Now, there's nothing wrong with being sued, but there is something wrong in having to pay the cost of defending a suit with people that have very deep pockets. And I just wonder why it is that we're doing this all by ourselves. I would imagine that there must be 75 other communities that are facing exactly the same problem, and it seems to me it would be we'd be in a lot better position if there was a draft ordinance that all communities could agree to, so that we could all pass the same ordinance, and then when we're sued, we've got 70 communities that are sharing the expense. That's the thought that's gone through my mind. That it sounds like if you're out there all by yourself, you put yourself in a significant risk for having to bear legal costs. So, Jonathan, could you comment on that, please?
Sure. And you're not the only one that has that thought. And, in fact, several of the municipalities in this county that are members of TCOG have joined together and are working with a law firm, Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna in Albany, which is actually the firm I used to work for. But so far they've yet to actually draft a law, as near as I can tell. And, their idea is that if and when sued, they can kind of pool their resources for defense of a suit. And, of course, other parties do have significant resources. But at the moment, they don't have any law. And, you know, one of the things about laws, of course, is that once you draft one, they're public, and one could always look at it and steal it, and it's perfectly good. So if they come up with something better than what I've come up with, I'd be happy to steal it. But also, you know, and we could at any time agree to join with the organization, which is, you know, the other municipalities, to have a collective defense if we wanted to do that. I tend not to be, you know, by nature discouraged about the, you know, possibility of being sued. And, you know, because that's always a possibility, and that tends not to bother me.
Job security.
Julie, do you want to answer that?
Well, I was given the impression that because it's taken so long to get anything back to TCOG for the group of municipalities to use, that a certain number of those members were really very happy that the county is prepared to go forward with something. So I think it's not unreasonable for us to act at this point. It's been being talked about for a long time.
Thank you, Julie. Okay, Lloyd, I've got Frank, Mike, Carol, and then Kathy.
Thanks, Martha. It's interesting that the memo that was read on behalf of Lynn Davidson addressed one of the very points that Peter just raised about buddying up with other municipalities. The concern I have, we're an educationally based community, and we bend over backwards often to include stakeholders in discussions. And I appreciate all the work, as Nathan has already described, that's gone into drafting this, and Jonathan's work in doing it, and that's fine. But I think we need to go one more step before we have a public hearing on this. I think we need to have, I know, yet another meeting that invites the individuals who may not be affected by this, but are concerned that they might be. And I'm thinking of, I have a couple of gravel companies in my neck of the woods, University Sand, and right on the edge of the county, and they travel into the county, Gaggle Sultana, which is quite a large one. And in Mike's district, RMS is in Dryden, and you can go on and on. There are several others scattered across the county. I don't think it would hurt us unless there's some, there isn't going to be any fracking done until the DEC puts out that draft and there's another comment period. So the probability is we have until
at least the summer, maybe even the fall, before anything, any particular permitting is even considered by the state of New York. To me, it doesn't seem unreasonable that we can't delay this for a month and have a public meeting, if you will. The hearing will not address this because the hearing is our hearing to hear comments from the public. I think we need to get some of these folks around the table so they, with a copy of this in hand, so that they can at least read it and come with questions to a gathering, if you will. We've done that with so many other things. I don't see why we can't do that with this. And what I might do at the appropriate time is propose a postponement of the public hearing.
Mike?
We spent time in the Government Operations Committee, particularly listening to the concerns of the agricultural community through the report from the Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board. Debbie Teeter and Monica Ross were there to report on that, and we ended up recommending the change in the law that specifically exempted all agricultural activities. Even though we thought that it did not cover those, we wanted to make it very, very clear that it didn't. The other thing was this, and Jonathan spoke to it, about the Tompkins County Council of Governments. Don Barber came to our meeting along with Jason Leifer from that group. And as Jonathan said, I think Don was quite interested in us carrying the ball on this to get a law in place. Passing this law doesn't mean that the Council of Governments can't continue in its efforts. And as Jonathan said, if they come up with something better, we'll look at it, or they can look at ours, and maybe it will be the one that becomes the draft. Peter, we're often on the cutting edge of things. We're an educational community. We think about things. We're out there with a lot of issues. And once in a while, we have to take the lawsuit. I don't want to spend the money on it either, but I don't think that prohibits us from getting the help of other places if that should come to pass. The other thing in the GO committee that really came home to me was when Don Barber reported a group from TCOG had gone down to Pennsylvania in some of the gas drilling area and met with public officials in that area. And their recommendation to us was be proactive about these kinds of things. They said that they're constantly coming up with new issues that they had never anticipated in Pennsylvania having to do with this hydrofracking and the whole industry down there, and they're always running to catch up. So that was the advice that they passed on to us, and I think this is being proactive.
Thank you, Mike. Carol, Kathy, I'm going to put myself after that.
I just want to make sure that the public understands that we're talking about setting a public hearing, not passing a law tonight, and that it's important, I think, for that to get that fact to get out. So I hope that our public information officer will make sure that word gets out. I wanted to thank Jonathan and others who for working on this so hard, and in particular for coordinating efforts with the New York State Association of Towns. I'm absolutely in favor of this for all the reasons that Nathan in particular documented and others have talked about over the months. I think that this is a good way to distinguish non-agricultural, commercial, and industrial related activity that's related to the ongoing economic base of our county from that activity that puts undue, unusual stress on our roads, particularly with the amount that we spend on maintaining the condition of our roads. I do note that this can catch non-regular activities, including very large-scale construction, not dump trucks, larger kinds of equipment that's brought in, that would need to be done maybe for a very large-scale industrial project of any nature. And that could include housing, including nonprofit housing. So I do think that it's important for us to get feedback, additional feedback from that we maybe have so far from, you know, from those who will be affected. I think it's less so the excavation-sized trucks, but it's important to know that. I would be amenable to, you know, setting a date that's maybe a month in advance instead of 2 weeks in advance so that we, you know, so that we have a chance and make sure that everybody can weigh in. But I do think we should set a date and move it forward so that there is no way in which we can be accused of having this in place just before hydrofracking is approved. I think one of the things that's very important that has been uncovered in the time I've looked at this and talked to people about it and gone to presentations by others who've come up with prototypes about this, which I've done, is that it not be just put in place for hydrofracking, that it be designed to catch you know, any activity of a certain frequency, some are using axle loads, frequency, duration, whatever, and I think Jonathan's done a good job of defining that. And I do think that it was very important to me, those of you who heard me talk about this earlier in the year, it was very important to me that we coordinate our efforts with those of us from TCOG and from our towns and municipalities who were similarly looking, because I think it's very important for companies that are coming from out of town to not be able to play off one of our towns against the other or the county against some of our towns. And again, I think that Jonathan has worked in conjunction with them, and I, in spite of the time I asked of Jonathan and others earlier in the year, looking at this and hearing about the presentations I've gone to, I am satisfied that they are happy that we're moving forward, weren't ready to move forward with other prototypes, and are looking to us to help set the way. So I hope we do it. Thanks.
Kathy?
Thank you, Martha. I'm reluctant to postpone this, and I'll tell you why. Our communities expressed pretty strongly their thinking about this. We've gotten lots of data about it. And in union organizing, there's a saying that in solidarity, there is strength. And it's true that it would be nice to get all the municipalities on board and something like the healthcare consortium that was required. But in something like this, we represent the county. It's up to us to show leadership. We have to be first into the breach on this, or we should be. I have a problem with that. As a matter of fact, I think the efforts that have been going forward on this have been transparent and have been done a pretty good job of pulling together the various stakeholders. Reading this, though, and not having the depth of knowledge that a lot of people have, I just have a couple of questions, and Carol actually touched on one of them in her comments. And the first one has to do with, in talking about large-scale construction, being a construction-oriented person, I think about things like large construction equipment, large projects that take place not just on our hills, but also housing construction. And I don't know how this permitting process works, and I don't know who the authority having jurisdiction is. I'm interested in knowing whether this would be something that would be basically regulated by a highway superintendent of the municipality, or since it's the county that would be writing this legislation, whether it would be the head of highway, or how that would work. And my guess is that other entities would be concerned. Having said all that and looking forward to your answer, I just want to say that I believe, as some have expressed, that acting on this sooner rather than later doesn't just set the tone for us here in the county. It doesn't just show leadership. I think it's essential in terms of getting those deep pockets, putting them on notice, and telling the rest of our community that we're willing to take a stand on this. Our water is that important to us. Yeah. You got the questions
sure.
in there, didn't you? Okay.
Should I answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's actually an interesting question about who has the authority, because
The way the highway law is written, there's separate authority for towns and for highways and for counties and for villages. And in each case, it's different. And with respect to the county, it's the county highway manager. Interestingly, with respect to the towns, I think it's the town board. So it's different, but for the county, we have the right person. And that's just what it says in the law, and we're fine, and we're following the law, the state law.
Thank you. And can you tell me just a little about the permitting process?
Well, the permitting process is something which all it really says in the state law is that you can establish a permitting process. So it doesn't really define that, but there's been a lot of discussion as to exactly what that would involve. And first, one has to have a basic analysis, which we basically do, of the roads and the route. You know, it describes in the law what information they would have to put in the permit. But what we would do is essentially designate the appropriate route, determine what roads that would be covering, what county roads that would be on, the state and condition of those roads, the type of roads, the load that is being carried. And there are formulas that basically allow you to make a determination as to the weight-bearing capacity of those roads and the potential for damage. And it's different on each road, and it's different based on the load and the frequency. So there's no one answer. You really have to look at it on a project-by-project basis.
Can I just ask my follow-up? It concerns the word bonding was brought up, and that's where I'm going with this, is would the county, by this legislation or by practice, have the opportunity or the requirement or the ability to require bonding? And if so, how is that calculated? Just roughly, just trying to get an idea where I'm going with this, and what I'm thinking about is, let's say there was a nonprofit associated with housing that wanted to do a large project, and let's just say that the authority having jurisdiction determined that the number of trips per week per day would necessitate permitting. How does one ensure them, their municipality or entity, that their bonding requirement is fair and reasonable?
Right. Well, I should say the law does not actually expressly authorize bonding. What it says is that you can have appropriate terms and conditions of the permit, and I would think that would be one. What would be fair and reasonable, the whole theory of the whole law is that you're doing it to protect the roads. So based on what could be the potential damage to the particular roads based on that traffic would be determining the amount of the bond.
Thank you.
Okay, this whole conversation, I want us all to remember it. We don't have to repeat it when we actually vote on this bill. So this is, again, just a public hearing, but it's worthwhile getting the discussion and the clarifications out. Jonathan, my turn. Jonathan, my sense is this just enables or empowers the highway manager to develop a process, and the process then would be sort of developed with whichever committee, whether it's GO or F&I, so that there are other steps beyond this that we will take to implement this.
Yeah, in fact, we'd have to. Otherwise, one could argue that the implementation was arbitrary and capricious, so we would have to develop some criteria and steps for evaluation and talk about that with Ed and the highway manager.
Okay.
And intend to do that.
Okay, great. And I would point out that if a Ford 150 is 5,000 pounds, that's 2.5 tons. I don't know how much lumber you'd have to get on a car, on a truck for to get up to 20 tons. So, I don't really know that we're going to have to worry about through your typical construction, residential construction project. It's also clear in number 4 under permittee about who's responsible. The permittee is the person responsible for the project generating the truck traffic. Are you going to work on that, Nathan, on how much the lumber weight? All right.
No, but I mean.
So the point is, the owner of, Frank, to your question about gravel operations, the permittee is the owner of any property on which the activity is taking place. So the gravel,
gravel mine isn't doing that. It's the person
who's
building the project, let's say. And in my what I understand about the industry so far is that on the whole they're not opposed to, you know, reasonable and fair permits and fees and regulations. They want to know what the rules are. They need advance notice and consistent application, et cetera. So I don't, and in Pennsylvania, I think a lot of companies are paying, once they destroy the road, they'll pay to rebuild it. But this is just to make sure that we're not relying on their goodwill, but that this really is in the law. Pat, and maybe that can be the end. Pat and Brian and Jim.
A couple things. If you look under on packet page 7, under section 4, general provisions, number 1, you note the word truck traffic associated with temporary projects. In our discussion in the committee, and Jonathan, perhaps you can clarify for this for me, but my impression was that we were talking about, when we said temporary, that word temporary is key to understanding the what would be included and what could be excluded from this. And my understanding was, if we were talking about a business that is currently existing here in Tompkins County and already regularly doing business, so it's an ongoing part of their business, that would not be considered temporary, so they would not be included in this, regardless of what the weight of their trucks happen to be. But we were talking about some new project that came along that they had not previously been engaged in, and that we would look at that new project that was not something that was going to be ongoing, but was going to be temporary in nature. So that in itself, I think, Frank, would speak to what you're talking about there with a local business. And that may be that people don't understand some of these provisions that we tried to build in here pretty carefully. I don't hear anything from Jonathan, no, so I guess...
Yeah, I'll respond.
Let me finish first.
Sure.
And then, okay. Having said that, I am sensitive to the fact that this is receiving attention, just now beginning to receive attention in the community. I think, like a lot of things that we do as a legislature, we sit down in committee, we work on a lot of things, and the community doesn't always keep up with us in terms of what's happening. And as people begin to hear about something like this, they haven't had the background discussion, they haven't had the opportunity to hear what the attorney had to say. They haven't actually seen it in writing. And it raises a lot of anxiety. And I think that this is a case where there is anxiety that's coming forward from the community. I think it's anxiety that can be responded to, because I think that the wording of this is such that we've addressed those concerns. But I don't think it's necessarily unreasonable, even though I want to see this go forward as soon as possible also. I don't think it's unreasonable, as Carol mentioned, to possibly set a date for the hearing for the first meeting in February instead of for our second meeting in January, to allow time for an informational session, so that those who are interested could come and perhaps learn more about what's involved in this law. I'm not concerned at all that we're going to have to change anything in it, because I think all of those concerns, as legitimate as they are, have been addressed. But I think it's fair to our local businesses that they have a chance to ask those kinds of questions. So I am going to move that we amend this resolution where it says January 18th, 2011 to say February, whatever the date of the first legislature meeting in February is.
First.
That would be first.
February 1st. Is there a second for that amendment?
I'll
Carol seconds that. Now, Jonathan, if you can remember what the question was.
She's exactly right. It only applies to temporary projects, which would seem to exclude the businesses which Frank was concerned
about. Okay.
And it does define in the law what a temporary project is in the definition.
Right. Okay. I have Brian and Jim. The issue is now whether to postpone this. The amendment, whether to postpone. So I want to give you first a crack since you're on the list.
I kind of wanted to speak to whichever one we decide on that we're going to.
All right, let's talk. Let's focus on the amendment first. Then. Frank and then
I don't want to lose my turn.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
Right.
Frank and then Mike.
Next.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Since just to remind you, I mean, I initially asked for time to move a postponement. And I'm glad Pat did that, but I would like to, I don't think February 1st is enough time. I think the second meeting in February would be stretching it, but that's the 15th. And I'd like to at least give a month. This board has had more discussion tonight on this than most of us have heard about this in the past. In addition to that, earlier tonight and throughout the last year, we've heard the word transparency mentioned almost ad nauseum, and I think that this is an opportunity to be perfectly transparent with the group that might be affected, but to use a word that Pat brought up, the anxiety level of some of the individuals could be assuaged a lot. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not opposed to this. I just think that we ought to take one more step at being a little more public about it. And I don't think the January 18th date gives us enough time. And Pat, with all due respect, I don't think the February 1st date would either. I think we ought to at least give it till the second meeting in February. And if it's appropriate, Jonathan, can I move to amend an amendment?
Yes.
I'd like to move to amend the amendment to the second meeting in February, to postpone until the second meeting in February.
Is there a second for that amendment to the amendment? That doesn't have to be. Okay, that's seconded by Peter. All right, so we're on to February 15th. I had Mike and then, Mike.
Call question.
On the amendment to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment.
Right. Is there a second to calling the question? Will calls the question. Will seconds. All right. All in favor of ending debate on the amendment to the amendment? Please raise your hand.
No, on calling the question?
Mm-hmm. On calling the question.
On calling the question.
Right. On the amendment to the amendment. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 opposed. Two are opposed. So the question is called. In front of us is an amendment to change the date to February 15th for the hearing.
Can I ask for a point of information or for our staff? Is there a way to have our staff weigh in on whether the date makes any difference if it's on that order of magnitude?
No, I think
we can't do that.
I think we can vote.
Can I know?
I think we can.
Point of information.
Yes?
I think you just said February 15th, wouldn't it be February?
Right. First, the amendment to the amendment is February 15th. Frank moved.
Okay, I'm
right.
Sorry. Okay.
That's what we are for the public hearing.
Okay.
All in favor of amending this resolution to say February 15th for our public hearing, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. What did I say was in favor?
Six.
Six. Okay. That fails. The amendment to the amendment fails 6-9. Mike. So
call
we're back on February
on
1st. What?
Call a question on the amendment.
Amendment is February 1st. Is there a second for calling a question on that one? Will seconds that. All in favor of calling a question on the First Amendment, February 1st, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Opposed? One opposed, 14 to 1. The question is called. The amendment is February 1st for the date of the public hearing. All in favor of changing the resolution.
May I indulge you with a point of order?
Okay.
Does the amendment include wording that a meeting will take place?
It just says that the public hearing would be changed to February 1st. That's the amendment that was made.
Thank you.
All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand for February 1st, the public hearing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. That passes 11 to 4. So the date is February 1st, but we haven't voted on the resolution itself yet. So I think I had Brian and Jim back to the original, and then Dooley. Is that right?
Yes, but I'll pass.
Let me see Brian first. Brian? Is your name Brian? Jim? I'm looking at Jim. Brian, you're next.
I was going to call the question, but there doesn't seem to be a question to call, seeing how we went to the alternative. I just will say I understand what Frank's doing, but I don't think there's that many people or businesses like that that are involved that wouldn't know about this public hearing. It is just that. It's a public hearing. We're sitting here discussing a proposed law that or ordinance that may change based on what we hear at the public meeting. So you know, that's all we're doing is trying to get this public hearing. That's all. And now I can't call a question.
Thank you, Brian. Jim.
But
Jim
I can call a question. And I would like to do
thank
that.
You.
I would like to call a question.
All right. Is there a second? Brian seconds that. Mm-hmm. All right. All in favor of calling the question on the original resolution as amended, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Peter, was your hand up?
Yes.
Okay, that's 13. Opposed? 2 opposed. All right. So
it's up, but it was tired.
What?
It's up, but it was tired.
Okay. All right. To vote on the resolution to establish a public hearing on February 1st, 2001 at 5:30, please raise your hand. 2011 at 5:30. What did I say? 2001. All right. Maybe we should have taken a break at 7:30. All in favor of the amended resolution? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? 2 opposed. That passes 13 to 2. I'm pretty sure the direction to try to establish the idea of probably establishing a public meeting of some sort has been heard, and I imagine the two committee chairs responsible for this can take it from here. Peter.
May I just offer a helpful comment that might be helpful?
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly consistent in Robert's rules for Mike to have called for the question on the whole kit and caboodle. Amendment, other amendment, and final vote on it.
I like that.
Thanks for telling me that.
Now you
I wish I had.
I
like that.
Carol.
Madam Chair, can I just ask if there are members of the public or businesses who would like further information about this? Who is the right person, either on the legislature and or staff, for them to contact?
I would suggest probably Jonathan, is that right? And I'd say either Mike or Dooley as the two committees. Okay. Is that the end of your report or facility?
I'll tag one thing on, if okay. I may. That is that Brian's speaking about the purpose of a public hearing was absolutely correct. And in fact, if it turns out that the public hearing, which is going to be February 1st, raises questions, we can go back to committee and do something with the resolutions, or we can extend the public hearing to a subsequent day. So, although it seems like we've made a decision, it's not completely clear.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dooley. Next committee report, Capital Plan Review Committee. This committee has not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for January 13th at 3:30.
I will certainly check with staff to see if we are prepared with anything to discuss, so let's stay tuned. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lang, Chair.
I just wanted to report on one thing that I probably should have reported on last time, and that's regarding the Tompkins County Public Library. I was a liaison from GO to that board this year. That's a good board. It's a hard-working board, and I think we're to be proud of it. Two longtime members there have stepped down with the end of their term because they cannot succeed themselves, and that's Hank DeLay, who was serving as president, and also Nathan Fawcett. The board has elected new officers for next year. Michael Stamm will be the chair of the board. Marcy Rosencrantz will be the vice chair. John Vineyard will continue as treasurer, and Erica Cree will be the secretary.
Thank you, Mike. And you have Resolution D.
I have Resolution D. I'm going to move it with one correction. In line 24, where it says Wednesday, that should actually be Tuesday. November 1st is a Tuesday.
Read the title.
Establishing 2011 meeting dates. I so move.
Is there a second? Jim seconds.
Second.
All right. Are we ready to vote? All right. All in favor of the corrected resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Oh, let's really pause and recognize this moment. Great. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam Maxey, Chair.
The Planning Committee is meeting tomorrow at 3:30, and that's my report.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, you're not getting away that quick, Jim.
Yes. I would like a committee, either PDAC or a committee of the choice of the group, to take a look at the IDA bylaws that have not been voted on over a number of years. And I may be incorrect in saying the total IDA bylaws, but there were some revisions made in 2008 that didn't get voted on, I guess. And I would like that whole question looked at again. And I would make the referral to the PDAC committee.
Okay. Pam's writing a note down. Frank, did I see your hand up?
Yeah, but Jim read my mind. I was going to ask exactly the same thing. And we did vote on it at this body, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we did.
But it would be good to revisit it. Thank you.
Okay. Budget and Capital Committee, Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Martha. When I was saying thank you to people, I forgot the three most important people are Kathy Covert, Michelle Potteroff, and Karen Fuller, who literally do all the scheduling for the XBC and the EBC and gather up the money and order the food so that the things can go on at the hour they go on. I believe I would like to schedule a meeting for Monday, if we have items, Monday at 3:30 on 110-11, and that concludes my report.
110. 10.
Okay. January 10th?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Public Safety Committee, Nathan Shinigami, Chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee would have met yesterday, but due to the peculiar dates and the holidays preceding it, we did not have a meeting. I would like committee members to talk to me after the meeting about maybe meeting later this month, or actually just waiting until the February meeting. We may have an important presentation from the district attorney for our next meeting. However, she needed time to put together her presentation, and so was hoping for a late January meeting. But I think that if we it depends on who the chairs are next year. But if we have an early February meeting, too, I think that could work. So
okay.
So stew on that, and committee, please talk to me after the meeting. That ends my report.
All right. Thank you very much, Nathan. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
WDIC will meet on January 26th.
Okay. Any questions? Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nathan, does that stew, did that stew get an environmental health permit? The Health Committee will be meeting on the 12th, 3:30 for this month. As you know, the committee is hanging together with the same members. Two items, there are other items on the proposed agenda, but two items I wanted to give the committee a heads up on and the board a heads up on, because we discussed this at the board. Remember the CHA and the approval of the individual group that was going to review, we were going to hire. The review committee has come up with a preferred candidate to do that review, and we will be dealing with allocating the money for that process because it could involve rollover, which needs to come to the board, at least to the committee. So that item will be on our agenda. The second item, a year and a half ago, we approved $300,000 for the city van project. Remember the Enfield Newfield run through DSS? And we've asked for the written report. It was supposed to be a 6-month report on how that's going because of the $300,000 that was allocated through the one of the grants. It was an oversight. We were expecting the report in September. It was supposed to be delivered in November, and we've asked again for it for the January meeting. So that's January 12th. We hope to have an update for you on that one. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions? All right. We need a motion to go into executive session to discuss the labor negotiations. I do not expect to take any action coming out of that meeting. Moved by Jim, seconded by Brian. All in favor of going to executive session, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. We are in executive session. We'll take a break for 5 minutes to shut down the cameras. Thank you all.